And you.
All right, it is 6:30. I'm going to call this meeting to order. Before we do the Pledge of Allegiance, Pete has informed me that the three of us that were elected recently, a while ago, it seems like, need to do re-up our oaths of office. So I've asked Suzanne to swear us all in, and we'll just do it all at once. Sound good? Give us instructions, Suzanne. Process.
Okay, stand up straight.
Ooh.
Well, I remember well. You can raise your right hand. Yeah. Do I?
She's got her own.
Oh, you have your own.
She's got her own. That's yours.
We're just gonna.
It's with the sign here, green tab there, Judy.
Oh,
That's you.
they're just gonna read them
You're gonna read
together.
your part there. All
That'd be
right.
my part. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Now. I,
Hi.
Judy. Oh, I,
Oh,
Judy Zeman.
you're gonna do it at the same time, or you guys? You go ahead.
Do solemnly swear I will support, protect, and defend the Constitution of the United States. Constitution of the State of Montana and the ordinances of the City of East Helena, and that I will discharge the duties of my office for the City of East Helena as Ward 1 Council Member with fidelity, so help me God.
Ditto. Okay. I, Don Dalton, solemnly swear I will support, protect, and defend the Constitution of the United States, the Constitution of the State of Montana, and the ordinance of the City of East Helena, and that I will discharge the duties of my office for the City of East Helena's Ward 2 Council Member with fidelity to help. So help me God.
Why?
I'm thinking you're supposed to.
Oh, okay.
I, Kelly Harris, do solemnly swear that I will support, protect, and defend the Constitution of the United States, the Constitution of the State of Montana, and the ordinances of the City of East Helena, and that I will discharge the duties of my office as mayor for the City of East Helena with fidelity. So help me God. Here we go. Now we can all stand up and do the Pledge of Allegiance. Wes is going to lead this little thing.
I pledge allegiance to the flag, the United States of America. To the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right. Thanks everybody for coming out tonight. Looks like we've got a full house, so we've got a pretty packed agenda. But I did want to take some time with the first well, not first. First item really on the agenda here is the presentation in honor of Police Chief Michael Sanders. So, Chief, you could come up here.
Raise your right hand.
You don't got to raise hands, but we got you back here from all of us here at the city. It's an appreciation of a career and service, a dedicated devotion to law enforcement. The City of East Helena is forever grateful. And a lot of us chipped in here, including council members and some of the employees here, and got you a gift card, the Carroll bookstore, so you can buy some of that purple clothes.
Awesome. Thank you all.
Yeah,
greatly appreciate
yeah.
it. And like I said, it was a lot of fun out here the last 4 years, and it was great working with all of you, all the department heads and the folks that work out here, as well as the citizens and the partners that work here in East Helena as well. I said it's just been great working with everybody and just seeing how well everybody works together. Out here, you don't see that very often, and it's just a lot of fun and very pleasurable to work in a place like this. So, I wish you all the best in your futures here, doing the best things that you do for the city and as an employee and as person that frequents out here as well. And, thank you all for all that you do for the City of East Helena. Appreciate it.
Oh, Michael, he wants a new picture. I get your pose on there a little bit. You got, you want one with council members or?
Yeah, she wants guests.
Well, I'll wedge in there. Get friendly.
John's sure stuff nice. So
carry off.
Yeah, better.
Sorry, but he had to wear it. You couldn't let John in this season. That'd be a little painful.
Wedge in like this.
Be yours.
Pete, what are you doing? I'm trying.
All right. 1, 2, 3, Chiefs.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay.
Stay for the meeting.
Yep.
All right,
we're going to do work now. We had a lot of rah-rah there. We're going to do some work. Next up is the Eastona Superfund update. We have the EPA DEQ members here as well. And I really appreciate you guys coming out and doing this. Just so you know, Bridges, this has been kind of a nice addition. So, start here.
So, Happy New Year, everyone. Let's see. The last book I last presented at the beginning of December, I can honestly report with the holidays, not much has moved, except we do have a little bit more of a firm date from the Army Corps of Engineers. Contracting looks like they're going to finalize the yard cleanup contract by the end of this month. So fingers crossed that doesn't slip again. And then next month, I'll hopefully have something more to report that's a little bit more exciting. Also, our investigation contractor, HDL, their office is near the mini basket, just off on the other side of Canyon Ferry Road. So they've set up shop and they're gearing up and they'll be out there soon. And then let's see, anything else new exciting? We're going to talk sewage in a bit and arsenic. So EPA, we're watching that very carefully and working with MEPG. I know we did some sampling for you in October and those results are starting to come in. So that's it for me.
Appreciate you, Reese. Is there any DQ? No, you're good.
Comments.
You're good.
Yeah, I can say it again if you. No. I didn't know there was any separation there. You want to do anything different? So yeah.
Say according to EPA.
Right. Exactly.
The agenda does have the two of you listed kind of separately, so I want to make sure there. All right. That brings us to public comment. No, this time is set aside for all public comment on non-agenda items. As you can see, this is going to be a pretty full agenda tonight and a pretty full agenda. So I will limit public comment to 4 minutes per individual. But this is the time for a public comment on non-agenda items.
Almost like we did last time. Dave Jensen, 401 West Gallup. Even though numerous signed Eastona Police Department citizen complaint forms with verbiage and narratives and photographs have been filed with Eastona Police Department during the period from February through October 2025, numerous discussions occurred with the mayor and the public works director, along with numerous different public comment presentations that have been made both to the elected Eastona resident representatives and non-Eastona resident decision makers. No action has been taken over the last year to address correct truck traffic and or contractor mobilization issues that are still negatively impacting the city of Eastona. As a direct result, the city of Eastona needs to amend its current truck ordinance to specify the maximum truck GVW allowable that would be allowed to travel off defined truck routes on residential streets and alleys, regardless of whether or not they have a business point of destination within the city of Eastona or not. As stated in my November 19, 2024 public comments, I'm not recommending the city staff waive specific vehicles, but rather limit the maximum GVW of the truck that be allowed to travel off the defined truck routes onto residential streets and alleyways, regardless of whether or not they have a business point of destination. Two, contractors working within the city limits of Eastona need to be held accountable for the damage to residential streets, alleyways, and residential property that they incur. In addition, the contractor should also be required to utilize the on-street parking areas in front of their client's property so they do not damage any adjacent resident properties on street parking areas and or property. Three, as stated in my November 19, 2024 public comments, of certain types of trucks can't safely navigate travel the residential streets and alleyways, and Eastona truck ordinance should not allow them to navigate travel on them, especially if they are providing no benefit to the residents who live within the designated residential neighborhood and is adversely impacting the city of Eastona residents' quality of life, increased the danger to their family members, and also will ultimately result in further damage to their property, along with adversely impacting and excessively damaging the existing pavement of these residential streets, thus creating excessively large future financial burden for the residents of the Eastona Fund. We used that. There was two pavement damage photos in the previous presentations that were a couple feet long. Now they're approximately 29 and 40 feet long, respectively. So they've just blown out of control. Four, truck traffic that would have been required to travel on Main Street, which is a Montana state maintained route, now travels on residential streets. Eastown, the city maintained routes that were never designed for that purpose, thus damaging the paved surface, requiring future premature repair and a replacement, which all could have been avoided by simply enforcing the Eastown the truck ordinance since other types of truck traffic now, motor graders and dump trucks now routinely travel east and westbound the entire length of West Gale Street, violating the east end of the truck ordinance. Finally, five, even though West Gale Street has been designated as a no trucks route, West Gale Street has been turned into a truck route that bypasses Main Street and trucks can travel at speeds well in excess of the posted 25 mile an hour speed limit, cannot stop within a safe stopping distance, which is common sense and should be required for residential areas and streets within the city of East Helena, and incurs tens of thousands of dollars of pavement damage that the average East Helena resident will have to pay to fix, but receive no benefit in return, which all could have been avoided by simply enforcing the East Helena truck ordinance and MCA traffic laws back in February and March of 2025 and now into the future.
Thank you for your public comment. Is there any other public comment on non-agenda items? Seeing none. Amy, is there anybody online?
There. I don't see any hands.
Okay. No public comment online? What?
All afternoons.
I can't see.
That's
the following license plates. AI will soon. That's what we need. More AI.
Well, it might be one word that's jump to latest.
Yeah, we don't even. All righty. Seeing no public comment online, we'll move on to the approval of the minutes. Council, you have in front of you the December 16th, 2025 minutes. I'll take public comment on those minutes now. Is there any public comment on those minutes?
Dave, 401 West Gale. Even though the public comments have recommended it be amended to read, Dave Jensen commented on the enforcement of the designated truck route ordinance. There's no ordinance, and it was basically it was more than just truck routes. It was the whole concept of the ordinance.
And the written comments are available, right?
Yep.
And the written comments are available. Thank you for your public comment. Any further comment on the meeting minutes?
Need a motion to
approve. Yes, I have a motion to approve. And a second. All those in favor?
Aye.
All right. That moves us to this court report. I don't believe we have one in this particular packet, do we?
We do
not. So that brings us to departmental reports. First up, as always, is Amy.
Sorry, I missed the last meeting. Kevin, for doing the minutes. AFR was submitted. This is the deadline. And we're getting ready to process all the tax forms. So that'll be January for us. And that's all I've got, unless you have questions.
No questions. Thanks, Ames. Next up was Police Department Deputy Chief Royce.
Good evening, everybody. First off, just want to say congratulations to Chief Sanders. He'll always be chief to us. His leadership was exceptional. His professionalism was amazing. Best boss I've ever had in my career. So he's one of the reasons why I came here. To continue law enforcement, and grateful for everything he's taught me and helped East Helena out. So just want to make that little comment. Congratulations, Chief. Enjoy retirement.
Thank you.
I'll be there one day. Okay, so I got a little something for everybody. Pass it down. I thought it would be a good thing. I know not everybody, you know, likes to see numbers or statistics or anything like that, but I think it's important that you know what we do or have done on the course of the year. So kind of just put together some numbers for you just to see what we do on a daily basis. So we ended the year with 5,800 calls for service. Those calls for service are anything that's created, whether we create it or whether somebody calls into dispatch to create a call, it's a call for service. And that's the same for Helena PD and the sheriff's office as well. So animal calls are in there, traffic stops are in there, domestics, everything's in there that we kind of participate. So we ended up with 5,800 calls for service and 326 cases that we worked. on the course of the year. So I know traffic comes up a lot, you know, they're not doing enough, they're doing too much. People call in, we need somebody sitting on our street, this and that. So I kind of want to focus a little bit on the traffic side of things. So on that second page, East Helena police officers in 2025 conducted 3,263 traffic stops on the course. That's a big number, and I get that. But if you divide it by 365, that's 8.9 a day. And I don't really think that's a high number when you look at it. So, and then as far as citations go, of those 3,263 stops, 532 resulted in a citation of one or more citations. Sometimes it's one ticket, sometimes it's five tickets, but 532 resulted in citations for 16.3% of our traffic stops result in a ticket. So our philosophy is not to necessarily punish motorists, it's more to educate when we can. So we give a lot of warnings when we think they're applicable. And that kind of fits in with what Helen is doing. They're about 15%, the sheriff's office about 6%. So I try to create that with 2024 statistics so you could see some jumps in some areas. But when we switched management systems, not everything got taken over. So, for instance, if you look up the DUIs, it said in 2024 we had zero DUIs, which we did. It just didn't show up on the report. So I can get some numbers for you if you would like to see that. But, you know, numbers did increase, as you can see on the front page, from when I started in 2023 to where we are now. And I think that shows what kind of office our employee here. We've got guys that like to work. Willing to work, willing to go out there, be present, be active, interacting with the public. That's it. So I thought it was just important that you guys see what we do. So when you get calls and comments, hey, they're not running traffic. Oh yeah, they are. They're running a lot. You know, things like that. So you can justify it a little bit too. Any questions on those kind of numbers?
I have two.
Sure.
The bar casino checks, you guys do that regularly, right? You have kind of a, is that counted in here when you're going through?
Yeah, so I believe there were 499, if I remember the number correctly, bar casino checks in 2025. So that's us going in.
No calls, you're just going in and...
We create the call.
Right.
So we get on the radio, or we can create it ourselves. We create a call for service. We go in, you know, we're looking for underage drinkers, making the presence known, that we're out and about, make smart decisions, don't drink and drive, mingling with the public a little bit, that sort of thing.
Okay, so, but they're not the bars and casinos calling you to go in.
No, that's us. There are a few of those, but they would be under a different category. If somebody called in,
oh, sure.
It would be a specific, hey, this person's acting up, and it could be a suspicious call for service.
Thank you. And the other one is missing persons. Define how that's.
So if
20 seems high.
It's a lot of kids not coming home after school, hiding. The last one that we helped out with, the whole county helped out with, the daughter was hiding behind the couch for the entire day, but had search and rescue, sheriff's office. We were involved. Everybody's looking all over the area for this girl, and she was hiding behind her couch, but she was listed as missing, so then you have to do that. And that's happened several times this year. Unfortunately, there was a couple from the same family out in the county, but it's kids not coming home. So it's created as a missing person, and then everybody goes and looks for them, and oh, there they are, they're at the park. They just lost track of time, things like that. Other ones can be, you know, I haven't heard from my brother in 10 days, 2 weeks. And it can be created as a missing person. So then we investigated that. So, and I believe there were 13 in 2024. So telling a little bit. Some of the calls that we deal with, you know, the domestics have increased, the DUIs have increased. Family offenses have really increased, unfortunately. You're still getting more and more of those kinds of calls. Parenting plans, lots of civil things of that nature, too. So calls are going up, for sure. Majority is traffic. But I think what we like to do is if we're not on a call, we're out and about. So,
no, I'm glad to see that you're patrolling often.
Any other questions on 2025?
Where does one buy a couch big enough to hide behind? That's what I want.
I don't know.
I want a big couch like that.
There was one last year just hiding in the cupboard. Oh,
man. Well, I ain't got covers that big either.
That's it happens. So with that being said, I would like to invite all of you on the vital.
I'm in.
If you would like to join us for a couple hours, I think that would be fine. You could kind of see what it's like on a traffic stop, or you know, domestic, if that were to pop off or something like that. See what it's like. So if you are interested in that, please let me know. We can set something up in the daytime, nighttime, whatever you would like. It's an experience. So.
I'm interested about that right now. Do I get one of those sticker badges?
You get a sticker badge when you're done.
Yes. They have them in there. I don't take them. You got to earn that.
kind of a fun note, a local resident called yesterday to thank Officer Zach Butler for his kindness and genuine interest that he took in his son. So New Year's Eve. They were lighting fireworks off too early, so Zach had a call to go deal with that. And showed up, and the kid was very interested in Zach. So, of course, Zach being Zach, he loves that kind of stuff. So he's handing out stickers and taking the kid to the car and showing him how to work the lights and what everything was in the car. And at the end, the little boy ran up to Zach, gave him a big hug, and according to Dad, that's all he'd be talking about for the rest of the night.
Yes,
was Officer Butler. So he just wanted to call and say, you know, thanks, because where he came from, that kind of police work doesn't happen all the time. So kind of the fun stories of police. And then in closing, just the next couple weeks, I've got several meetings with the high risk offenders, CGCC, IT, 911 advisories, the same old thing every year. So I'll still be a part of that. So, any questions for me? Thank you.
Thank you. All right, next up is Kevin.
I'll be quick. Hey guys, on my report, just a couple things. I responded to DEQ for the full-life violation from October. Then this was just a contaminated sample, chain resampled right away. It came back non-detect. So he's got a quick touch on the inside of the bottles or something.
Mm-hmm.
We have DEQ coming, got notified by them. It's true. Next Wednesday, we have our every 3-year annual DEQ inspection out at the wastewater plant. Don't really expect anything there other than, of course, I want to talk about the violation, which we know we have to respond to them. The plant's old, that's why we are aggressively moving ahead with building a new wastewater plant. So don't expect anything out of the norm there. Thanks for coming and staring at the garbage truck with Scotty. He's proud of it. Thanks for allowing us to make that purchase. And again, just reaching out to the city of Deer Lodge for saving our bacon the last month and a half and allowing us to borrow that truck. Mr. Peter Albrum, who's staring at his phone, thank you for the assistance in making that happen. So that was great. And then lastly, in your report, it's just numbers to stare at again, but Jeremy Fadness and I, with the MPO, updating the long-term planning stuff and that MPO map, it just gives some numbers to stare at of, you know, potential jobs that are, you know, being created by the growth and population and stuff like that. So as you stare at that, or if you stare around with your questions, reach out. Of course, we're doing still working progress. So other than that, I'll sit down if you want to have any questions.
Have we returned the truck to Deer Lodge?
We did. We took it back today.
Did we make Pete do it?
Yeah. We don't have a CDL.
Well,
I'll
put it on for a ride along.
Right? A ride along. That's a ride along for you.
Good.
It's got two steering wheels. How's that work?
Really?
Yeah, that would not be fun. Thanks, Kev.
Yeah.
Well, Chief Campbell's not online, is he?
No.
Chief Campbell is excused tonight. So that brings us to unfinished business. The first and only item on unfinished business is the request to reissue canceled stale dated checks that Amy had before. We're bringing it back up. Amy can take it from there.
So here's my list of the checks I canceled that by MCA I present to you. And then they will appear upon the minutes. So if anyone says, hey, I, you know, found that in my couch, they can come make a claim against it. And
you did find, you got
I did.
A number of them off of
you. Yeah, I was able to track a few people down. So yeah, that is my request.
None of these checks have been reissued, and we just ended up with
no. I reissued the few I could find, and then I ran them all through Steph at Valley Bank just to verify that none of them were goofs, and one was a goof that
yeah,
had.
I mean, I can't believe the credit card company, you know, missed $2,000.
No,
yeah. Are these ones here the ones that weren't reissued? The ones, the list we have.
Yeah, these are the ones that I've canceled to get them.
We couldn't find Elaine.
Well, I could.
Could, but I didn't want to.
Man, I feel like we can find Elaine.
I'll let him know.
Okay. Other than that, yeah. All right. So the request is to approve the reissue or cancel the stale date checks. Are there any public comment on the request? Council.
Are you saying to do so? I'll bet the one for Elaine.
I would kick that one out, yes. I mean, I think he's easy to find.
It's, yes.
I can go knock on his door and find him. I mean, it's not.
I like, can print another one for him.
I will move to approve, except for, to cancel the checks, except for check 8675 for Delaney Harrison.
Okay.
And I will move to approve.
Second.
And second, all those in favor?
Aye.
All right. That brings us to new business, and probably our most attended one here. We have the Fair... Bear Servants for Christ Motorcycle Ministry here again. They come every year. Would like to request to use the Main Street Park for the bike blessing again this year. This is, I don't know what number it is. Maybe year 10. I don't, it's been a lot.
Well, Honorable Paris, Council Members, this is my 10th year being with the crew, and I can tell you that we've been here as long as I've been coming to Helena for this blessing. So thank you for having us. My name is Roy Fair. I go by Servant Pac-Man, Servants of Christ. You can see we've got a couple other black and whites here as well. We're requesting use again this year for the East Helena Park. We know that there was some damage. It looks like it's attainable to be repaired by the end of April. We're looking for the last Saturday in April to possibly use the park from 9 a.m. to roughly 5 p.m. That setup and cleanups included. You guys have been very gracious over the last few years and have allowed us to use the pavilion, giving us access. Thank you, Kevin, for power and Porta John's. If we can have it again, we would really like to shout for joy on for that. So we are happy to police. We clean up, we cook burgers and dogs because it's a nonprofit. It's not needed for safe handling, but we all have safe handling food certifications. So that's all covered. We do this in partnership with the Christian Motorcycle Association and with Crossroads Ministries. So the three organizations come together and put this on. Last year, I think we had about 150, 180 motorcycles. The year before that, we had a lot more. Hopefully, we'll keep staying within a decent pattern of growth with that. We've had really good turnout, really good response. So I think it's a great community builder for us as motorcyclist enthusiasts, as well as the community. So it really shows that you guys are invested to not just your common mainstay people, but those of us on the fringe. So if allowed, we'd love to have the park again.
Thank you. So you guys have the request in front of you. Is there any public comment on the request? I got a little. My wife has a 50cc Honda Metropolitan, And if you could bless that, it scares me when she drives it every time. That'd be great. I'm gonna send her down there. That's I mean, it's not very fast, but it's still she's dangerous.
You know, Mary, we've had kids show up in the past couple of years, and we've put blessing stickers on their bicycles.
There we go.
Yes, absolutely.
I'm gonna send her down. Seeing no public comment, council.
Is this also for the fee waiver?
It is for a fee waiver request. Yes.
I'll move to approve fee waiver and use of the park.
I have a motion to approve.
I'll second it.
And a second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Thank you.
Bye, Dan.
All right.
We're getting expelled back in.
That's right.
Have a great night.
Now we got another request. This is for another one of our fun ones. The Adventures in Cardboard. Down there, this is probably the fourth, fifth year of this one. People are getting right on it in January, aren't they, with the request for the summer?
Yeah.
Busy. Yeah. So again, this is the same request we have had multiple years to use JFK for the, Adventures of Cardboard. Eric's not here, really. I don't see Eric.
So, Eric, are you online? I think he is.
I don't know that there's anything new to be provided to you on this one. This is kids doing constructive things with cardboard in the park in the summer. So it's not a bad deal. Is there any public comment on the request? Council. No. I have a motion to approve. And second, all those in favor?
Aye.
Thanks, guys. So we have. So next up, you guys all just got a report from Deputy Chief Royce. It is in his duties to assume the Chief's thing as a deputy chief, but I wanted to have run through you guys just, while we're doing the hiring process to have you guys appoint Deputy Chief Ed Royce as the acting police chief. And so that's a request of mine. You have in front of you, if you have any questions regarding him or that decision, it would be basic in his duties anyways, but is there any public comment on that request? Seeing none, council. I'll
make a motion to approve.
A motion to approve. Okay. And a second, all those in favor?
Aye.
So you are now acting chief.
Will they get training?
You know, he went to, and just for reference, like, he went to a, how many week?
22-week.
22-week leadership class put on by Northwestern University. I thought we'd get him in some purple, but nope, he's still wearing that Duke blue. But it was really intense, the class that he just reached and it up. So, he's been doing training on his own, and obviously we provided that, but it's been quite the endeavor.
Chief, it was a great class. It was very time consuming, 30-35 hours a week, 22 weeks, lots and lots of papers to write. But it was a great class. Yeah. A lot. So, and they cover everything from, budgets to scheduling to uniforms. Very extensive. It's very, very good.
All right. Well, so we got that one. Next up is the Rose Hills SID bond assessment examples. This is me and Peter on here regarding this one, but kind of have it in front of you. I'm going to lay this one out. I think you, or I can if you want to be doing
this. Sure, if you want to. So We've had a request, the Rose Hills subdivision that's coming up on the hill is looking at ways, had approached the city about ways to assist in funding some of their initial infrastructure. Typically, we don't do SIDs or bond for infrastructure required for subdivisions. They come in and do it. And then that just include that cost in the lots. But this was something that through the state would backstop. And we have Courtney here. She'll go in much more detail. But essentially, I wanted to get it on your table. I wanted to get it on the table before you so you could at least start to consider it and understand kind of what was being discussed and brought to the city. We hadn't had any firm numbers or anything from the developer who's here tonight, which there's a next agenda item. So I kind of leaned forward a little bit and asked Courtney, like, hey, could you just run some numbers so we get the gist of what this might look like? And essentially what is being asked, typically a subdivision like the other ones we have in town, they put the streets, the water in, all the stuff, and then the developer pays those costs and then they sell the lots and get their money back with some profit. In this case, it's a different type of developer who has a different intent. That's not just profit driven. So they came to us. And if you look at the spreadsheets here from the meeting that we had with the director of the Board of Investment and the developer and Courtney, it sounded like around 10 million was kind of the top on what they could borrow, which the state would then backstop, but we would then assess on the land and the lots. Sorry, I have a cold, so I'm getting through this. Not feeling great. But generally at the 10 million, I just said, could you run it? And Courtney did this, and thank you very, very much. 'Cause I was like, we just have to give them some kind of framework to understand. This would show up on their tax assessments. Essentially, we'd be borrowing on their behalf and having them pay back a loan on the sewer. Well, in this case, from what we've seen, a water tower and some turn lanes and things that they would then pay off over the next 20 years, and it would show up on their tax bills as an assessment on an SID from the city. So I, given that we didn't know the parameters, I kind of assumed they were going to ask for the total amount of 10 million and maybe more, it seems. But I just said, could you run it at 10 million, 750 or 7.5 million, 5 million, and 2.5 million, just so we have like, so the council understands what the request is and what these residents of the city of East Helena would have on their assessments to include streets and lights and parks, the same that the other subdivisions will have. They'll have this additional one because the thought would be they have a cost savings on the lot up front because the developer didn't put that in and didn't have that expenditure. It's the thought. But they'd have to pay for that infrastructure over the next 20 years. So again, on the full 10 million, you can look on, that's the page 30. Single family home would be assessed around 700,000 or $700 a year, around $58 a month. And it goes down from there. But that's generally the gist. And I'll turn it over to Courtney because I think she can go into more detail and maybe the mayor.
First of all, I just want to thank Courtney for all her work. This is a lot of work, Courtney. We really appreciate your effort on this. It's not lost on us, the amount of effort you put into this. So we were all very appreciative and happy you were able to get this done. So to provide our council person, I think that to simplify this before Courtney kind of takes over the nuts and bolts of it all, the really things you need to understand is this is an opportunity for Jacob, and he can handle it a little more to loan at a lower interest rate. But that exposure for those loans comes through the assessment, as Pete was talking about, for the lots. Now, when they see that, they will see that as a city assessment. So note that when whoever buys this home at whatever point, they will may not be knowing this conversation takes place, but this will appear on their tax as a city assessment. So if you will be the individual receiving questions about their tax bill and why this is there, for the length of this loan, and so that's why this is in front of you today to talk about it and digest. And going forward with this, it's an opportunity. It's an interesting opportunity. I wanted you guys to look at it and to see what it would look at. And I'll let Courtney do the nuts and bolts.
Everybody, thanks, Mayor Harris and Pete. My name is Courtney. I'm a partner at Orsini Whitney, and I'm bond counsel to the city. So part of that, over the past year, I've been having some conversations with Brad and with Kevin and with Jacob and others, just about kind of how this might work. And as Pete pointed out, it's a request that comes up in a lot of different communities about whether the city or the county as it may be, would help finance this infrastructure for whatever subdivision through the use of the SID, the Special Improvement District, as a financing mechanism. It has the benefit, as Mayor Harris pointed out, to the developer and passing through to the eventual property owner, residential property owner, is that it's the financing can usually be done on a cheaper basis. So the city can issue bonds that are tax exempt, which means the interest rate is lower. And it's often viewed as more secure and more marketable. And part of the reason that that's the case is that typically to make, and I'm just going to go barely into the weeds, I promise, not belabor this point, but Typically, the reason that SID bonds are marketable at all is because the issuer would need to pledge what's called its revolving fund. And the revolving fund is a really, it's a really sensitive pledge for an issuer to make, because if there is, if there are delinquencies in the repayment of the assessments, the revolving fund steps in, makes the debt service payments on the bonds, and then the city, in this case, would have to replenish the revolving fund with general fund dollars, or by levying a tax against the whole city, subject to your statutory mill levy limit. So it's a pretty big deal, and that's one of the reasons that you don't often see SIDs done on bare land like this proposal would do. The really fundamental shift that happened for this project is in the last legislative session, the legislature passed House Bill 505, which allows the Board of Investments to use this particular pot of money that they have available to them to pledge in lieu of the issuer's revolving fund, to pledge that pot of money as security for SID bonds that are issued to finance infrastructure that is facilitating the development of housing that meets particular density and affordability metrics. And so, you know, through conversations that Jacob's been having and the rest, you know, Kevin and Mayor Harris and I had with Dan Villa, the director of the Board of Investments, it seems like the proposed development at Rose Hills is a really good kind of pilot program for, or, you know, pilot test for that program. And that shifts the risk from the city and your, you know, general fund to the BOI, Board of Investments, and their. So kind of in that context where we might not otherwise even be having this conversation, this is kind of a financing tool that has a lot of potential here. And then there is this very long, very laborious email that Riz have suffered through your packet that I put together. As Pete said, kind of trying to break down what does this look like on a really basic level at these different financing points, different maximum principal amounts. So I'm happy to answer any questions that you might have about that. It's a lot of information and a lot of detail. It's also based on a lot of estimates, right? So we don't know right now. The Board of Investments previously had a policy that $10 million was the maximum amount. In their most recent meeting, they changed that policy to be they'll go up to 10% of the dollars that they have available. So that's up to, it's a little over, I think it's a little over 12 million. It might be a little higher than that now. So they have more flexibility on their side, and Jacob can talk more about the infrastructure needs for the project. But these are kind of really rough ballpark, and I have no crystal ball and am not a financial advisor. I don't know if 5.5% is going to be reasonable at the time that bonds would be issued. I would say that with this, if this Board of Investments pledge is ends up being a good fit for the project, this and the city wants to move forward, that pledge would make these bonds, just anecdotally in my experience, really marketable, because that's a big, that's a lot of money that's kind of security for the bondholders. So this hopefully, these are hopefully conservative estimates. The other thing that I would point out is that under state law, like the SIB financing tool, it's a very laborious statutory tool that has, you know, it's just very step by step and pretty rigid. One of the specific statutory provisions is that property owners have the right to prepay their assessments at any time. So prepay the principal amount of the assessment plus interest to whatever the next interest payment date is. And although the bond would be issued You know, you would want to issue the bond with the expectation that people might have these on their property taxes every year for the next 20 years. There is, you know, often a mortgage lender would want this to be paid off at the time. So you may end up with a lot of prepayments, and that's going to be Amy's delight to manage those. But
would it come, I have a question, but maybe I'll wait.
No, so this is a loan the city would take out on behalf of the, okay.
My question is about the, because the county does our assessment, would Amy be the one, or does the county, would they be the ones responsible?
You would be working with them to make sure that the assessments get on their rolls when they're doing, when they're preparing the tax bills. Mm-hmm. And then you would be collecting the, well, probably the county is collecting the assessments, giving them to the city, and then you all would be using that to pay debt service on the bonds or prepay debt
there's,
service on the bonds.
There's a labor component for the Amy.
That for sure. There.
Yeah.
Can you, I just want to talk on, hit on why we normally are not open to doing this. One, you mentioned the statutory borrowing limit that the city has. And that's tied to our budget, right? Our general fund or assessed value, right? I'm trying to recall.
So you normally would not be participating in a financing like this, particularly as like a general fund obligation. As you noted, you do have some general fund borrowing ability, but it's very limited under the statutes. The SID bond, like your SID bonding capacity, is not related to that.
I'm kind of just trying to draw the link that we have a very small budget, and if we were to bond our general fund, secured by our general fund, I mean, a $12 million loan is far outside what we'd be able to borrow under the statutory if we were doing it that way. So the risk when it comes back on the general fund, would be far outside that. So when other subdividers might come to us and ask for similar assistance for a project that is not driven by a nonprofit organization that's looking to help the community with low-income housing and other housing stock, the risk to put on the city, the reason that I've always advised, like, this is a non-starter. Our municipal budget is what annually, Amy?
2.2.
The general fund's a couple million. When you go to the city of Helena and you talk about all the funds, they're like at 90. I think they just had to fill the city manager role. I think it's over $100 million now. You go to Billings or Missoula, they're able to absorb that risk a lot easier. I mean, we just can't. So the fact that the state now is backstopping this is the only reason I think it's something that we should even consider. But
absolutely. Thank you for clarifying that. Totally makes sense. And I'll say, you know, Missoula wouldn't do this if the revolving fund needed to be pledged. And typically, particularly with bare land development, where there would be an SID or an RSID on it, that revolving fund pledge is really what makes it marketable, because otherwise, potential bond purchasers would look at the proposal and say, well, what if they don't pay? There's nothing for me to go, you know, the collateral usually is not balanced. Right?
So think of post 2000, like 2008, the housing bubble, where all those lots were plotted, there were streets in, there were sewer mains in, and the houses just never got built. So, and then the LLC, which most of these developers are coming to us and doing this under a corporation, they walk away. There's no one with a home there with an interest in maintaining their home and paying even anyway. That's why we normally would not bring this to you. But in this case, there is a mechanism whereby the state is trying to assist. And I think the next conversation we have with Rose Hills will be interesting on to what actual infrastructure they're asking to use this money, these funds for. So,
great.
I have a question on, you know, this is a 15, 20, 25 year project, Rose Hills altogether. These figures you come out with, is that on total build out for, I mean, because you're going to have the first year, let's say 50 houses and 50 and, you know, at the end of 20 years, it may not be built out yet. The loan, you know, I don't see where that's getting paid off.
Right. That's a really great question. And it's, so the, it relates a little bit to the assessment methodology that we've been talking about, and there would still be more weeds to get into to figure out really how this works. But there are, you know, only a few really specifically set forth assessment methodologies in the statutes. One of them is like an area methodology or an assessable area methodology. And here, and I think I also mentioned that the SID as a financing mechanism is really rigid. So it's a difficult tool in a lot of ways. And it's a little bit difficult when we're at the very outset of development and there's a lot that is going to happen that we aren't sure about yet, right? Like we don't know exactly how many houses will be built, where, and how that all will work. What we can do is use an assessable area methodology, which kind of ties the assessment to like a square foot. So no matter what happens, what Jacob will be taking the risk of is, you know, the property owner, the owner of the property will be responsible for paying the assessments no matter what. So whether there's been a house built on, you know, this 1,000 square feet or not, the owner of that 1,000 square feet is going to be responsible for paying the assessments that relate to that 1,000 square feet.
From day one.
That makes sense. So from the time of issuance of the lot.
So the 20 years starts when the first piece is, when it begins, and the 20 years ends. So some people will not pay 20 years.
Right.
Okay.
That's right.
That part of your question too? Mm-hmm. Are you asking how did she get 6.5 million?
No, I could be. No, I was just curious about how it was being paid when you didn't. I mean, is Habitat writing a check every month to cover all the other lots?
So
maybe I should have asked it that way.
And throughout the development, Courtney, can you talk about the reassessment, like how we start to shift those into actually developed lots? And as it gets plotted for public utilities and streets and things, like there's a reason on the vacant land why it's hard to lean forward and do it as opposed to.
That's right. So the way that I am thinking about it, the way that we've been discussing it, and again, I do think that there's kind of some more weeds to get into there, but what seems like it might work the best here is this kind of per square foot methodology, which does mean that as preliminary plats are approved and different, you know, different pieces of the property are identified as property that's going to become a park or a street or, you know, something that's more public right of way and not an individual, like developable property. The assessments relating to those pieces of property would need to be repaid at that time, like at the time that those square feet are converted from developable to public right of way. Which means Amy is going to get prepayments coming in repeatedly, and then those prepayments will be used to prepay the bonds as soon as, you know, by the next payment date. And then the bondholder is going to need to re-amortize so that the interest doesn't get out of whack.
Because we're not, there's no prepayment penalty. If the principal is reduced, then the whole, so if 12 lots are pay up ahead of time, it reduces it for everyone. I mean, minimally, but yeah.
No, that's right.
So if a street is dedicated, Jacob's writing a check to the city of East Helena to pay that. The city of East Helena is not assuming that debt.
Correct.
One thing I think that these numbers are great, Courtney, I think they're really beneficial for the council to see. And again, your work is awesome. I think one thing that is not addressed here is any other traditional SIDs we would put on a development would also appear on these individuals' taxes. So if you look at, you're taking a lighting district, a road district, similar to the things we have at both Highland Meadows and Vigilante, which I think would absolutely be the way the city would want to go about it at this point. But note that those are not accounted for in this assessment.
That's a great point. Yeah.
This one goes away at least.
Is there an administration fee that the city will get for handling all this paperwork, or?
He's going to get a golden crown.
Well, I hope she gets a candy bar too.
Fully deserves.
So it's another clunky aspect, but there is an administrative charge that the city can include in the principal amount of the bond. So upfront, 5% for administrative costs, which can be also engineering, all, you know, different aspects of the city's work in putting the transaction together. That can be included in the principal amount of the bonds. There's not an ongoing, like every year you get some administrative,
she very much like a 2% fee or something that goes towards just booking in her.
There's not
to help out Jamie and whatever she has to do.
So this is an information only thing to get you guys the numbers to get you kind of exposure to it. I think at this point might be a good time to switch gears to the Jacobs.
Can we? I have more questions.
Go ahead, but I'm sorry.
It's stuff.
Okay. Absolutely, don't do it.
Where did the 6.557 million square feet come from?
That came from Jacob.
So Jacob.
How went about with that?
Is that like home square footage total, or is that the total square footage of the property?
It's all the saleable square footage. It's the pieces that we can sell. So it's not the streets, it's not the parks, it's not the school site, it's not the former dump site. It's only the pieces that we can sell, which we came about because when we did the preliminary plat for Rose Hills, in that first parcel, which is the first five phases, what we ended up finding in the 62 acres that were buildable, 70% of it would result in finished lots that we could sell to either a homeowner or to another builder to build.
So to the point of if the street is dedicated, then that does not, nothing comes to us.
This is one of the pieces that we still need to kind of connect our dots on, because there are two ways to look at it. If we can identify developable, then we can target that and say, like, that's the square foot that this dollar assessment goes to. And to the extent that we can't, then we're spreading like a lower amount, but across everything. And so
the assessments could come down
potentially
because you're spreading it out over more square footage.
Right.
Yeah. But it wouldn't be any more square footage than this. This is the
initial.
It would be more because that's the net square footage.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
So
we would be responsible for more as the developer. Over the course of the 20 years, we're going to own the majority of the land for the majority of that time and transfer it to homeowners over that period. So we're going to be paying the majority of assessments as the developer. Courtney is saying because the Board of Investment guarantees it, it elevates the bond to an investment grade. So banks look at it and say, it's basically guaranteed money. The state's guaranteeing it. So they're able to offer a better rate. We're still basically paying for it.
Right. And
with the assistance of the homeowners.
Exactly. Yeah. And my guess is that as you're developing and kind of even just breaking the large parcels into smaller subdividable tracts and, that some of the developers that you'll be working with will just want to pay it off and have it done as soon as they buy it. So
mortgage companies.
Like we need to make sure that it works for an eventual homeowner. Sounds like an egg. But I don't know how many eventual homeowners will ever actually need to get on their property taxes. My guess is that in most instances, it will have been prepaid at a higher level before it trickles down to their ownership of the property.
So the assessments are potentially high. The interest rate is potentially high. But it's better to give you the high number than to give you the low number and then come back and be like, oh, more than we thought.
So another question I have, it won't happen, but say Habitat for Humanity goes bankrupt. Who is responsible at that point?
So the Board of Investments would then be on the hook to repay the bondholder and would the so the assessments would be they're foreclosable in the same manner as a tax lien. So the city would be required, you know, this is another not insignificant administrative component to think about. The city would need to, you know, pursue its option, its kind of standard procedure of foreclosing the assessments as a tax lien.
But we don't do that. The county does, correct?
Yeah. Well, you would, it would be within coordination.
Okay.
The county would be doing it, like, on behalf. So most likely you would end up with the Board of Investments owning parcels 5 and 6. or, you know, unless the property was sufficiently valuable that some investor wanted to come and buy those assessments.
But it would be to the debt of the Board of Investment, not the city.
Exactly. Yeah. The city would be involved, as I said, in this kind of administrative facilitating role to make sure that the assessments are foreclosed on in the ordinary course, but there wouldn't be recourse to your general fund.
And then until the infrastructure is paid off, does the city still own that infrastructure? And how is that guaranteed? Just as we own other infrastructure that developers have paid for.
You just own it in the same way.
Even if it defaults,
yes.
It's still the city of East Helms infrastructure.
That's right.
I think that's all my questions.
Is there any other questions?
I just had a quick question. So all these homes that are going to be built, there's not going to be any sweat equity ones in this concept, right? So they're going to have sweat equity type. So how is that assessment going to work for those people? These people are going to prepay, so those people would have the money to prepay that?
It would be the same assessment, whether it's a Habitat home or a market rate on the property. So Habitat could choose to pay off the assessment or on the
market. Some would prepay and some would do 20 years. It could be. So you got a mixed bag, not one concept. But whoever buys the property makes a decision, I guess.
Right.
Same. Okay. Oh, well. All right. Good luck with that.
Are there any other questions for Courtney?
Thank you, Courtney. Thanks.
Thank you.
Really appreciate your work, seriously. Yeah, we'll move on to Jacob now, and just because it's information only as well. Jacob's portion of this is also information only, so.
Yes, Mr. Mayor, Council Members, thank you, Jacob, for installing Habitat. I guess I'll try not to go off and repeat things, so as much as possible. The history of this, anything that sounds like I'm trying to make you feel sorry for us as a developer, that's not the intention. It's just the pragmatics of developing land that we've been discovering. You know, East Helena having all this land that's been basically sitting undeveloped, that's created unique challenges. This particular piece of land, because of the necessity to create another pressure zone, creates an additional challenge. Most of the rest of the city and the first part of sections of what will be Prickly Pear Estate are in the existing pressure zones, which are pretty adequate water pressures. But Rose Hill's just across that siding that goes to the concrete plant. That's where basically the dividing line is. It requires the construction, the building of this pressure zone. And so that's where you get the $6 million water. In order for us to get to the first house in Rose Hills, you have the offsite infrastructure, which is what this bond would cover, which would be this. We're proposing the lift station for the wastewater, the water tank, turn lanes on from 282. It doesn't include any of the streets or the lighting or sidewalks or anything like that in the first phase of Rose Hills. It's just these large infrastructure components that will be owned by the city of East Helena and that will serve Rose Hills. So that's important to recognize. That total is basically, you know, that $10 million bill, plus building all the roads. We're basically talking all this together, to put up the first house in Rose Hill, but basically you're at $17 million. And it's because of the unique challenges of all this infrastructure that's needed in order to make the land buildable. House Bill 505, which created this opportunity where the Board of Investments is guaranteeing the bond and doesn't put the city on the hook, has opened the door for this conversation. For the last 2 years, I have been borderline harassing Kevin and Brad, and they've been very patient because we've been running scenario after crazy scenario about phasing infrastructure to get to the point where you would get the full infrastructure East Helenese, which means the water tank, the lift station, everything that's needed in order for Rose Hills to exist. Because the simple matter is, if we were doing this through conventional financing, unless we were able to come up with a huge amount of money, it's just not a financially viable plan to be able to put all this in all at once. The bond creates this opportunity to do all of the infrastructure so that it doesn't have to be upgraded and cost more in the future. At one time, it'll be all the infrastructure to serve Rose Hills from the first house to the last house, and it'll be right-sized for the neighborhood. The Rose Hills would be covering the assessments on the majority of the property, as I mentioned, because we will own most of the land for a long period of time. As you mentioned, the build out there is probably 20 years. By the time we get finished here, we'll probably just be wrapping up the payments on the bond. We'll still be making those payments. So we've had to run our finances and say, how does this work? And because the bond allows us to access a lower interest rate, it really makes sense for the finances of making the project work. There obviously is a trade-off. The assessments on individual properties, which we've modeled here, is in a significant one. It's one that the city will have to examine the administrative aspects of it. Those are definitely trade-offs. The benefit to this is it creates a really viable pathway for this affordable neighborhood. We believe that the assessments on the individual properties are still affordable because Rose Hills has created more houses that will be on smaller lots, which is we're planning to actually cut our land costs for building homes in half, not just for Habitat homes, but for the market rate homes, just because they're smaller lots and you're able to get a mix of different types of lots, houses in that. So that balance and looking how it basically creates a runway for a very successful neighborhood. It gets East Helena the infrastructure it needs and requires to make sure that the neighborhood's going to be successful. And it maximizes the number of ratepayers who will help them maintain the infrastructure and maintain that over time. We think is a pretty good balance. It's not without trade-offs, but we think that the balance is a pretty good one. In the absence of this, we really are kind of going back to the drawing board and looking at proposing a phased infrastructure plan, which, at this point looks like we've been talking about proposing, could we get a booster station in to get the first couple of phases, get some houses built, get some lot sales and revenue so that we get to the water tank maybe 5 years from now. And we know that that's not what the city wants, and we would rather not spend more money in the long term putting in a booster station, only to then pull that all out and build the tank, and it's going to cost more money in the long term. But in order to make it financially viable, it makes it challenging to think about it any other way. So, like Courtney said, this would be the first project would be done using this new mechanism that was established by the legislature, House Bill 505. Board of Investments is very keen on making this happen. They're hoping to consider it, and they'd like to, if the city is amenable to this, in February, so that we can keep on moving. But I'm happy to answer any questions if come up from that. So there's not too much.
Thank you, Jacob.
Yeah.
You had mentioned the market rate lots. What is the percentage of the total lots that are going to be market rate versus affordable homes?
Yeah. So we are, our goal is at least 30 to 40% would be affordable, with 60% being market. So, we're we're a nonprofit, but we have to think about this as a business. It has to pay for itself because we're not the infrastructure that's offsite, just one component of it. That bills $10 million is another $5 million, $7 million in on-site for the streets. All this has to work together. That's roughly where we're looking at 60%. And then there'd be commercial properties as well. Now that we've been able to work with the EPA to release some deed restricted land. So.
And you anticipating that you would be selling the lots then as they're created to builders or other developers, or what, how do you anticipate?
Yes, that's right. So in phase one, 110 building lots, as Habitat scales up its construction activities in the first phase, we would be looking to reserve 25 to 30 of those initial lots. And we'd be looking to other nonprofits that build affordable housing to potentially build some apartments. But 60% would be lots that we would sell to market rate builders to build market rate homes, but they would be built in the style of Rose Hill. So we're talking about the townhomes, the cottages, and the single family, because the lot size govern the size of the home. And so you would have more affordability even in the market rate homes as well as the Habitat homes. So again, Rose Hills is all ages, all incomes. With this model, we see ourselves able to reach even single income on Social Security with a housing price to, we think there'll be homes in Rose Hills that'll be exceed, half a million. That'll be market rate homes, and there'll be everything in between.
Nobody else? We'll keep going. I guess my only question is with the discussion that we had with Courtney about folks being able to prepay. We had had that meeting where we had the pre-meeting where we talked about you potentially paying this thing down so you could go back to the Board of Investment and continue to do it. Part of the intent of the city, part of the reason that we're considering is for those affordable homes. However, the project as holistically needs to be viable. So I don't want to forestall that. If there was a way to capture that, or whether you'd considered it or put any more thought towards that after our meeting.
As far as splitting it?
Well, just when we say 60% of them are getting market rate. Mm-hmm. So those market rate, those home developers who build the homes and sell them, again, aren't paying the upfront cost of this infrastructure. So being a prosecutor, maybe I'm a bit negative. I just think that they're going to pocket that savings, and then that borrower or the person buying the home and borrowing their mortgage is just going to pay for the infrastructure over the next 20 years, but they're also going to pay the market rate for the home, which normally would have included the $700 annually that they're now paying it twice, if that makes sense to everyone.
We could go into depth about how this would work. We're not planning on selling. I'm not going to undercut Oakland or Mountain View Meadows as far as a lot price to a market rate builder.
I guess it'd be nice if when you sold those to the market rate builders that mm-hmm. they came in and paid off their $3,000 assessment for this thing. So that way that lot is free of that going forward. So when they come in and pay market rate for a home, they're not also being double tapped for that.
Well, they next may, because most mortgage lenders would prefer that. So they may.
Well, it's not only going to land.
It just makes the mortgage to be sold on that home that much easier.
Only reason I'm bringing it up, Jacob, is because we had kind of talked about it and kicked it around last meeting, whether there was some way to.
To pay it off over the course of, and use it basically as a funding mechanism for building.
Yeah. And as my only concern is, as people paying market rate are essentially, I don't think that their home is going to cost them.
The entirety of the SID being paid up front on the market rate to make sure that the expense doesn't fall on the future homeowner and thus that exposure to the city being like constant. Like, why is the city taxing me so much?
We had talked about it.
We looked at it, an equivalent home just over the hill, Mountain View Meadows, assessed at a similar value compared, even with the other assessments for lighting and street districts that Easton has, the taxes paid by units in Helena are still higher for a similar unit, similar price than a similarly valued, tax valued unit in East Helena. So comparing apples to apples, if you're comparing in East Helena, Rose Hills single family house would have a tax bill. Yes, in this model, that's $800 more. That's the high end. We're hoping that'll be less.
Right up to you build that school on there.
What?
Yeah.
Right up until you build that school on there.
Yeah. But I mean, I think this is something that we can discuss because, again, it's a mechanism that gives us a lot of runway at a lower interest rate for being able to build this and get the infrastructure one and done and get it the first time and make sure it's being done right the first time and that we're not, you know.
Brad, are you here for this issue tonight? Yeah.
So that actually, could we have them, like, I thought I was going to go back. It'd be the Brad or Kev. Kev could be very helpful too. Could we kind of, Brad, I might lean on you a little bit more, but like, talk about the advantages with this specific product or this specific topic.
Can I ask one question before that? This is on the SID. What is your time frame? I realize you're still off over here in the field, but do you see this as being done? What is your goal for that? To have all your financing in order.
The need for housing is right now. We're still hoping to be building homes in 27, which means we've got to put together this, you know, this financing plan here.
Yeah, I don't know is there a time limit on beginning this process or whatever to take it before the board?
So the next Board of Investments meeting is February 25th. I think their packet deadline, I think there's probably some flexibility, but we've heard January 20th. They would like to have an application from the city and materials from Habitat. Again, I think there's flexibility. Their next meeting would be May, maybe. The way that the financing is proposed to work is also a two-step process. So the city in its application it's an online application on the Board of Investments website, but would include as supporting materials the form of the proposed forms of the creation documents. So the proposed form of the petition from the property owner, the proposed form of the resolution creating the district that the city would adopt, and the proposed form of the agreement either between the city and the Board of Investments or potentially among the city, the Board of Investments, and Habitat as property owner. That agreement is, would provide the mechanics for how the Board of Investments pushes money into the reserve account that the city would create for these bonds. If the Board of Investments then approved, the pledge to these proposed bonds, the city and the developer could go ahead and create the SID, work through that process, create the SID. The city could issue first a bond anticipation note, which would be, however, $11 million or whatever it is, with the security for the bond anticipation note being that following construction of the improvement and prior to the maturity of the bond anticipation note, the city would issue the long-term, the 20-year SID bonds. So that might be getting a little bit into the weeds, but it's not... it's a little bit weedy. The Board of Investments has proposed to buy the bond anticipation note. So that saves a step in a nice way in terms of the city needing to reach out and try to find a purchaser.
Jake will go get his money in 2030.
Yeah. I mean, it's like a ways out. So, so we have these multiple steps. We have Board of Investments approval. We have City Council approval. We have issuance of the initial note. The proceeds of that note, then there's also Kevin and Brad's part where they're also working with Jacob to put together a bid package. Go out to bid, make sure that we're sizing the day, and then the proceeds of the note are going to go to pay the cost of the infrastructure as it's being constructed. Once that's all in. And so prior to the 3-year maturity of the note, the city would issue the long-term FID bond. And my guess is that Jacob is going to be the person, or, you know, Habitat is going to be the entity that is going to be able to help find a purchaser for the long-term bond. Anecdotally, because the SID special assessments are like a super lien on the property, the construction lender who is lending to Habitat for some of this initial development is going to want to be involved in the may want to hold the SID bond. So it's a long process. It's a, you know, it's not a quick lift, but it is, you know, I think a pretty meaningful difference in interest rate and kind of financeability. But yeah, it would be, you know, everybody would be working their tails off, you know, all through the spring, and then in order, if the goal was to start construction on the infrastructure improvements sometime in the summer.
You said a resolution has to be adopted to submit the application?
Not to submit the application, but a form of the proposed resolution would be some part of the application.
Does the resolution require two readings?
No.
Just what?
So, and it becomes a city project, and meaning Brad and Kevin. So it's not just administratively. We're going to be working with Rose Hills and their plans, but the tank and everything is going to be administered, and all of that. It becomes, we're the borrower. It becomes the city's infrastructure project that we're.
But we would be billing Habitat to pay Brad.
It would come through the bond. So if you look at Jacob's, it's page 35 in your thing here. There's administrative costs. I mean, the project cost, I assume that $6 million water tank includes all of the engineering and all the stuff that, I mean, we are building a brand, to Jacob's point, the city is getting a brand new water tank out of this deal.
Could we get to that back? Brad, would you take 5-10 minutes here? Explain the advantages of not only having all the infrastructure of this built up front and not in a scaled manner, as well as the advantage of having the city involved in the planning and operational, you know, bid process for this.
Yeah, there's a couple things. I mean, that water tank is really a needed thing for the area that Rose Hills is planned for. Your existing water tanks do not have the elevation to provide the water pressure that people need for showers, all their appliances, and all those sorts of things. So, you know, one of the options that has been discussed, just because it's just so financially difficult, is to use a booster station, which is pumps that provide pressure. And there's no storage reservoir or anything there to provide, you know, water pressure when those pumps are off. So just like the other day when the wind blew, that would have been just a total disaster for Kevin to try to keep water out there. I mean, yes, we can have generators and things out there, but immediate, just within seconds of something mechanically going wrong, you're down and nobody has water. So it's really a significant issue for maintenance and, you know, the operational time and all of the upkeep and maintenance. So that is really kind of an undesirable situation for the city. I mean, maybe it could be worked out for a short term, but really having this water tank is so much better, because then, you know, the pumps run when they're off. Everybody has water pressure. There's 1 million gallons there or something sitting there. When the power goes out, that can provide pressure for a long period of time and allow you to, you know, get your pumps running and your generator running and so forth. You know, it is a very, very expensive thing to build such a structure, and something that is a little bit unusual for development. So the other part of this is the Manlow lift station, which is kind of a separate agreement, but a lift station that will be constructed kind of across from American Chemet. And it will take, you know, the Moontown area, and it will also take all of Rose Hills wastewater, and it'll go underneath Highway 12. There'll be a dedicated gravity line for just it. It will take it out to the wastewater plant or to about Gale Street there, where it'll tie into a big outfall that you know, Serco used to utilize, so there's capacity there. So all of those things are, you know, not really a part of the development itself, but are needed to, you know, for capacity to provide them with water and sewer. And so, you know, in this case, those are very, very big investments. And, you know, having us involved with, and having Kevin involved and having the city kind of direct traffic, so to speak, on such big infrastructure items ensures that you guys get what fits, what you need. And, you know, obviously we're going to be all working together, I hope, with you know, Habitat, with, you know, Kevin, and having good meetings and making good plans for what makes sense and what's reasonable, what's not reasonable. But, you know, I think, you know, quite frankly, developers and people who do that work are just not used to doing those sorts of projects. So I think, you know, where the city is more used to managing those sorts of infrastructure projects, I think there's an advantage there for you guys in getting what you want and making sure that everything ends up dovetailing with the rest of your system. Is that what you're looking for, Kelly?
That's 100% what I was looking for. You did great. Thank you.
Maybe, yeah.
Thank you. Appreciate it. That expertise there was valuable to listen. Just understanding of how this would bolt that together from the city. Well, thank you.
I guess the context I just want to say is that this is not a development is not an easy thing for the city. I think people think that like we make more money and you get more tax base, but like for Kevin and Amy, myself, like there's a ton of work that goes in with these things and there's an admin cost at the front end, but generally there's just a lot more meetings and work and time and effort to maintain these things and keep them moving forward. I mean, think of the Valley Drive, the road right out here going to that high school. How long ago was that high school built and that subdivision? Kevin's still doing endless meetings on that. So, I mean, this is not a small ask. I do think there's a ton of benefits for us actually doing it, designing it and owning it. And I think growth is inevitable. It's just your city staff gets inundated and there's not a whole lot of recapture on the long-term impact of these things. So I just wanted to highlight that. One, Kevin's awesome and so is Amy. I do my best and I think we're all willing to continue to work with folks to make these things move forward. But
I just had one question. You got a lift station in there, but it's got to be lit. That stuff's got to go somewhere. So the expansion on the plant, because the plant's only got so many EDUs, you got a pretty big development. Is there upfront, how many million are you going to put in upfront for the expansion? The plant's got to be expanded before you put the homes in. We've already been down this road with these other subdivisions where now our sewer rate's going to go up 105%. It's 2 years.
So this is not a public comment portion. This is discussion regarding with the council members. It's information only, and we have experts and council members. Any of that questions? You guys are welcome to ask those questions.
My main concern about everybody's work, but if it will limit our ability to have other, because we're going to have to bond for the road, sewer.
That's a great question and a really thoughtful concern. But this is it doesn't impact your ability to do other kinds of bonds. It doesn't count against your general obligation bond capacity or general fund bond capacity, and it doesn't it wouldn't be included in maybe your like revenue bond capacity.
The answer I could say this wrong is, being that it's backed by Board of Investments, and they're the ball step, it doesn't affect the city's capitalism.
It's just another line item that shows to the residents that, man, the taxes in East Helena are crazy, which we're not. I mean, honestly, compared to my house, I mean, I have a ton of different SIDs. I pay way more than we assess out here for sidewalks and trees and lighting, random stuff.
You got sidewalks?
I don't, but I still pay into them. There are sidewalks in and around the neighborhood. Point being, there will be eventually parks and SIDs and streets and lights, and those kind of come sort of easily. You see the effort we have to put into the streets, the lights, and the streets are something we update, you know, as they do by phase. So Jacob, you will be phasing this, the rest of the development. So the same as we add streets and we get the width and we figure out general guesses on how much this chip ceiling and all that stuff's going to cost, it'll just be another one for these folks, for those who end up having a home in that 20-year period?
I have a comment, and it's a hope and a request, which is in the future that this is very thoroughly explained to new residents of Rose Hills, as it's going to be complicated, more complicated than even our other SIVs, but that if this is approved in the future, I know people still come with lots of questions from the other subdivisions, not fully understanding what the SIVs are. And I think that Habitat has a unique opportunity to educate their residents on what they mean, so that they are fully aware of that up front, where other developers aren't going to do that.
We're already working through a robust plan with the EPA to educate so that there is no.
And I assume so, but it's a thoughtful hope, and I appreciate that is something that will be doing any resident, market value or otherwise, unique attributes of this neighborhood.
Are there any further questions for Jacob? Before you leave, I think you'd like to at least touch on your requested city action and next steps portion of this, Jacob, for you.
And it really is, yeah, whatever we need.
So there's a, going forward with yes,
there's yeah. So by the end of the month, the Board of Investments, Dan Villa basically said that they'd like to have something around the 20th so they can put it part of the agenda, because they're aware of the timelines that we're working with. We've been talking about, the timing for the water tanks and lift station, all this infrastructure construction, with the idea that we could get building houses in 27. In order for us to hit these key marks, they need to come to a place where they say, okay, yes, it's reserved, and now you can go through the process of putting this thing together and issuing a bond anticipatory note or, the next parts of that. So, and I guess, is there a resolution, or is it just a nod?
And maybe I don't mean this to sound like I'm changing my answer. I think that there would need to be council action to approve moving forward with an application. So I think that the next steps in terms of council action would be a council action approving moving forward with an application to the Board of Investments, approving city staff working with me and working with Habitat to pull together application materials and make sure that those are available and to go through the application process. The application itself is pretty straightforward and not super time consuming. The things that need to be uploaded with the application are going to be pretty time consuming. As we have mentioned, we have heard this January 20th date for the February 25th meeting. I also am not shy about asking Mr. Villa if the Board of Investments would be willing to have a special meeting. I think that this project is a really big deal, not just for East Helena, but kind of for the state as a trial for this program. And I think this program is potentially a pretty big deal. So I don't think that it's probably realistic to say, oh yeah, by January 20th, all of this pulled together. I think that we can, I think that if the council perspective is, yes, we want to try to move forward with this, then that's the directive, and we can move, we can push that forward as expeditiously as possible.
So our next scheduled meeting is the 20th. And I think that would be a fine time to have this group discuss the possibility of whether or not they want to move forward with an application. But I do think the interim time is necessary to digest this information for them. I think this is some big, big stuff. And I think that, I get there's other time frames involved and other things, but I'm cautious that this group is given the time and the information to make informed and decisions that I think that are going to be impactful for generations for the city. I think they need to have that time. And I think that that's a fair amount of time to digest. So I don't want to push them and have special meetings on our end. Be clear.
Thank you.
So that was information only item. And you guys have.
I did have one quick question. Just Jacob, your math on page 36, just where you're using the $12 million ask as opposed to where we did the initial math on the $10 million. So when you see a single family home at monthly cost $3 million, that's just because you went up to that $12 million. Is that right?
I went higher.
Okay, yeah, I just wanted to draw that distinction that the 58 XRL space.
Yeah, between the time we had that meeting here, when it was set at 10 million, the Board of Investments, because we had talked to them about everything that was required here to get Rose Hills going, they actually increased that to the $12 million mark. So I just went up to the top.
So generally just 20% more. But I wanted to highlight that. Thank you.
Thanks, John. So I think you guys have gotten discussion, and there's, and I know that Jacob's available, as you know, anybody here is available to any of you council members for questions going forward. I think that use your resources is valuable time to take and digest this. So I'm going to move on to the next agenda item, which is the wastewater treatment plant improvements phase two reimbursement bond resolution, which I'm going to let Kevin explain completely.
So Morgan can yell at me if I did it wrong, but basically this is just a resolution that allows us, since we are committing local funds currently for the wastewater plant upgrades, that if down the road we decide we want to reimburse ourselves through the loan, we can have us do that, correct?
That's right.
So this is just a fail-safe that if we decide that maybe we didn't want to spend these local funds, we can borrow that back. Where if we don't have this, we cannot.
There's no requirement, though.
It's purely sort of technical regulation.
So you guys have the resolution in front of you. Is there any public comment on this resolution?
Do you? Real quick.
Yeah, no problem.
Hey.
Yeah, Chief.
Dave Jensen, 401 West Gale. I know this is just the estimated aggregate principal amount of 21.6 reflected in the resolution, which is not also reflect the estimated cost of long-term interest payments. Is an excessive amount of debt that the city of East Illinois has to commit at this point in time. Regardless of what people want to think, the city of East Town is really still only a reasonably sized homeowners association that has been incorporated, since the population level is still not enough to warrant a higher urban urbanized classification. The wastewater treatment facility issues need to be addressed utilizing cost-effective solutions based on the current size of this community and not solutions at any cost based on a consultant firm has recommended.
Thank you for your public comment. Is there any further public comment? Council.
I appreciate the additional motion, and I will move to approve resolution 6.
I have a motion to approve.
30.
What is number is this 36. One?
636.
6. Thank you. There we go.
Second.
I have a motion and a second. All those in favor?
Aye.
All right. That's all the non-fun stuff. I mean, here's the most non-fun deal with me. It's been holidays. I haven't been up to a whole lot. Me and Kevin been kicking around some stuff with Wiley 3 and some future stuff there, improvement-wise. So we've talked about a bunch of that. You guys also have the garbage truck. I would like your feedback on if you think that we should decorate it. It's pretty white. It's very, very, very plain and white. There's been some suggestions of maybe putting like a vigilante logo on it or something. I don't know if we want to put the vigilante in the trash, but I don't know that it's.
I had other ideas.
Maybe all the other schools of the conference on the trash.
No, they were in the back.
Yeah. Any ideas? So if you guys, I guess that's what I'm asking. If you guys have some ideas to maybe decorate the plain white garbage truck, shoot them on over. So. Although it's been really good, I don't know, you guys saw tonight, just seeing Scotty, one of our employees, and just giving an employee good equipment to work with and just seeing how excited they are to do it. So it really was good to see. Been working through the stuff with the chief. I'll have a conversation with you before the night's over, but regarding the, you know, recruitment of a new chief, that process is moving forward. The application period has closed. We have a couple to look at, so we'll go through that. And just, you know, the holidays, and that's it. I would be remiss, and I'm going to try not to throw up when I say this, but congratulations to the Montana State University Bobcats on their national championship.
really, really, really tried to not.
That was that laugh was for you even.
I really, 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 really don't feel good. But that's it for me. That's it. I'll move to council member reports. Council member Dahl.
I went to the chief's retirement party. It's very nice. Looked like it was very well attended. Other than that, I have nothing.
Councilmember Leland. Councilmember Feist.
Chief's retirement party. Well deserved for him. And I've a number of calls about some other things.
Yeah, Chief's party was great.
I wanted to go to Chief's party. That's my anniversary, so that was not happening. I called him and said, "Listen, I'm going to try to stay married, so I'm not going to make your party." He was cool with it.
She's not retiring.
Yeah, she's not retiring from, yeah. We'll move on to the legal report.
All I had was there was two football games since our last meeting, and so my thunder was stolen, and I have to give credit where credit was due. That was very gracious of you to mention that the Montana State University Bobcats did win a national championship. There was another game a couple weeks ago on the 20th that went their direction as well. And again, I just proud of you. That's all I got.
Thanks, Pete. Mm-hmm. Let's pay the bills.
I will be paying the bills.
Motion to pay the bills in a second. All those in favor?
Aye.
All right. With that being said, I will adjourn this meeting at 8:11. Sorry it took you guys so long tonight. That's some heavy stuff. So
maybe we could get a logo from every school because they all have different names.
I think Helena High Capital High.